All right. Good evening again, everybody. How's everybody doing tonight? Yay! Wonderful. However, I must tell you, it's already day 4. But to cheer us up, we have a great last talk for today here at Milliways. By the way, the Fediverse hashtag, as always, is hashtag CCCamp23Milliways. And who here in the crowd owns a vacuum robot? I would say not great, not terrible, but oh wow, I didn't expect that from like a hacker crowd. So then, especially for those of you who own one, the next talk is for you. In the next 45 minutes, our speaker, Dennis Gieser, will tell us all the latest news about vacuum robots, their security and their privacy issues, so that hopefully in the end, your robot will not suck your data. Please give a warm welcome to Dennis and enjoy the talk.
All right. Welcome to my talk. Thank you very much for being here at this late time. It's great that you had 4 days of camp. I mean, I came a little bit late because I had some stuff to do, but it's kind of great here, except for a little bit warm. So my talk today is kind of like an update about vacuum robot security and privacy. And I know people think like, oh, wait, that's always the same topic every 2 years. But I mean, there's a lot of development. So, you know, let's do a quick update. So for people who don't know me, which is the slides are kind of a little bit broken. I'm a PhD student at Northeastern University, and primarily my research field is in wireless and embedded security and privacy. I think due to the amount of many robots, vacuum robots which I have, I can call myself a vacuum robot collector. So I have, I think, like nowadays, like something like 45 robots, and I'm have interest in the reverse engineering of interesting devices. And this can be anything. I mean, robots, obviously, but I have also like smart speakers, you know, look at flash memory and other things. Let me quickly ask, is the format kind of weird a little bit? Is this my laptop? Okay, let me fix that maybe real quick. How many security experts do you need to fix issues? Okay.
Yeah, the laptop, der sollte sich mal aufmachen.
Okay, great. All right, perfect. Working with experts, that's great. Okay, so like I said, I'm interested in vacuum robots, smart speakers, and all other interesting IoT devices. Some of my recent work is, some time ago, I was looking at Amazon smart speakers, like Echo Dots, and I bought like 86 used Echo Dots from eBay, from other sources like Kleinanzeigen in Germany. I was doing some forensics, and let's say it was very bad news for Amazon. So if you have used IoT devices, don't sell them, or bad people like me might buy them. Some other recent projects, I do a lot of flash forensics. For example, on the left you see like the Pixel Watch, but I look at embedded devices and see what kind of data I can extract from flash memory, but also look at flash memory itself. Surprisingly, a lot of flash memories have their own processor on them, and you can hack the flash firmware to maybe do malicious things. So this is kind of like a current research project of me. Another thing which I run is robotinfo.dev, which is basically a website where I do a systematic analysis of robots. For example, which operation system they're running, what kind of sensors they have, if they have vulnerabilities or not. The primary focus of that site is more or less to look at security and privacy. And what I use it also for, kind of like in the back end, to track firmware changes. So basically, every time there's a new firmware update, there's an automatic process which downloads it, extracts it, and, you know, compares it. So we kind of get an idea what the vendors are doing. one of the sources how I get all this information is basically by buying devices, disassembling them, and kind of start to emulating them. So I have like something like 50 or 60 emulated vacuum robots, which are kind of behaving like real robots to the cloud and kind of just look like, okay, do we get like pushed firmware updates? Is there anything new? But also on the other side, what we do is like we take a look at the app. So we decompile the app and look like if anything changes. This is also like basis for further research. I mean, for example, right now I'm working on also machine learning models and some other things. By the way, the rack which you see there is like one of my few racks of robots. So I keep like a set of robots from basically a reference model from each of the models which we support for routing. And every time there's a new firmware update or if I need to check something, I just go to that rack and just grab one and test the things which I need to test and just put it back. Which also means, and I get this question quite often also on Twitter or X, or by email, like, oh, hey, I want to buy a vacuum robot, which cleans the best? I have no idea. I root those devices, but I mean, I'm not actually using them except for one, which I use, and it does the job good enough, so I have no idea. So don't ask me which one is the best for cleaning X, Y, and Z. All right, so what is the goal of this talk? Well, I want to give you an overview over the development of the vacuum robot hacking over the last 5 years. And I want to give you like some idea about vulnerabilities and backdoors which exist today, and give you some understanding about which routing methods we have. The ultimate goal typically which I have is to get root access onto a device without disassembly. Sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't work, but you know, we try our best to find ways and sneak ways around to kind of get root access. As a side note, generally, we have me and the vendors don't hate each other necessarily, but the thing is, we have a very competitive kind of setting. So every time they fix something, we fix something, and it's kind of like always a competitive thing. So I know, for example, when I was giving this talk at DEF CON, that they were watching live, and right now we're probably working on firmware updates. So, yeah. So some of the devices which are covered in this talk, they are the current Roborock vacuum robots. Some of them just came out kind of very recently. They are more or less all the Dreamy robots, like all the new generation, like our generation vacuum robots. We have also a new routing method for all the older ones, which came out like 1.5 years and before that. So the so-called P models. And everything you see here can be also technically applied to other robots, for example, the Naval robots, which are more used in America, Shark AI robots, and also some lawnmowers like the Zegway. Everything which is like underlined are basically robots which have like cameras which you can access in one way or the other. Right. As a general thing is, I mean, why we just as a comment, kind of why we jumping around on Roborock and Dreamy, why not iRobot? The thing is, surprisingly, Roborock and Dreamy have like some of the best value propositions in terms of like features and price. While iRobot nowadays they're very very good in like reducing the amount of hardware which we put into the devices to make it barely work for the use case which it's used to, which means it doesn't make any sense to root them because we don't have any resources anymore to run our own stuff on them. So there's a particular reason why, I mean, technically I have rooted these devices, but I'm not touching them, basically. Okay, so about this talk, the result which you see here will be basically the result of 15 months of research and experiments, which is a little bit annoying in the sense of like if you're sitting for this long time on kind of, I wouldn't say 0 days, it sounds always like very important, but on vulnerabilities, which you can't tell anyone and disclose to anyone because basically as soon as they get burned, they basically get burned. This talk is a collaborative effort with me and Zoran Bayer. And Zoran Bayer is like the developer of Valetudo. Traditionally, we had this the separation of me doing all the routing part and all the hardware stuff, and he's like basically taking care of the cloud replacement, Valetudo. Nowadays, we're kind of like, you know, he's also like going into the routing part because that's the cooler part, and you know, he wants to enjoy his life too. So. We would be also here if it wouldn't be if it wasn't the community. So a lot of people from the community support us by testing routing methods, giving feedback to about software, catching things which we messed up potentially, donating devices, donating money. So there's like a lot of support from the community. Typically what we do is like we don't disclose things to the vendors, so the vendors are kind of unaware of the findings. Well, technically not today because I gave this talk basically at DEF CON like 5 days ago, so they basically weren't aware 5 days ago and we didn't see any updates so far, so we are still working on that, I assume. But expect like firmware updates and patches over the next couple days, I assume. Okay, so what's the motivation of this talk? So why the heck do we want to root devices? Well, one of the things is, for me at least, when I started that, is like to play with cool hardware. These devices are very powerful. It's basically, imagine of a Raspberry Pi or a smartphone on tires, very compact, driving around here in your house. So it's a very interesting platform for devices. The other thing is, because it's so powerful, I want to basically stop the devices from constantly phoning home. And phoning home is kind of a thing with these devices, so you can expect a couple hundred megabytes per month in telemetry data, pictures, whatever. The other thing is, if people want to use custom software like Home Assistant, it's very, very difficult to integrate these devices in that system without relying on the cloud. And sometimes the cloud can also go down, so there's a lot of like kind of problems. One thing which becomes more and more important nowadays is diagnosis of broken devices. This is not necessarily, I mean, it's still an issue in Europe, but in America you have a warranty period of 1 year, and these devices tend to break exactly after 1 year. And so a lot of people in the US have the issue like, okay, you know, we cannot let it get it repaired under warranty, so we need to find a different way, and we can help out people by, you know, diagnosing like what kind of things might be broken. And the thing which is related to my research is basically to verify the privacy claims of the vendors. So why do we don't trust the great companies who develop these nice IoT products? Well, if you think about these devices are directly connected to your home network and can talk to everything typically in your home and have like some internet connection. I know some people put them in some VLANs and stuff like that, but I mean, let's be realistic, most like 99% of the users probably just put them in their normal Wi-Fi and call it a day. The communication to the cloud is encrypted and you have no idea what the content is. Also, even if the vendor is not malicious, developing secure hardware and software is hard, so nothing says that the vendor can't get hacked at one day or that there's some weird kind of vulnerability in a device which can be used remotely. If you remember the Mirai botnet many, many years ago, which basically where IP cameras got hacked from the internet and created like a huge botnet. So we want to kind of figure out if there's like some hidden vulnerabilities which the vendor didn't put in on purpose but which exist there. And one of the things why I'm a little bit paranoid is because vendor claims might contradict each other. So I have my favorite go-to example for claims of vendors, and I use always Roborock, but technically all the other vendors do more or less the same thing. Roborock claimed for the S6 Max V, like, hey, it's built for privacy, it's certified by the TÜV, my favorite company. Nothing is ever duplicated, nothing is ever stored, nothing is ever sent to the cloud, the cameras are only used for AI detection, it never leaves the robot, everything is fine, trust us please. But if you scroll down a little bit more, it says like, by the way, you can watch your pet remotely from your phone and can talk to it and you can see like what's going on in your home and you can drive around in your home and basically watch if that everything is okay. So now the question is like, okay, on one side nothing is ever sent to the cloud and it's not possible to access the camera like basically upload pictures, but on the other side you can access it remotely, so what is it? As a side note, I mean, there's different ways to interpret what the exact thing is, but I mean, it's very, very unclear here. The other thing is, iRobot got recently caught how they uploaded pictures of users, of development devices basically, which they gave away for free to users to the cloud, and where they used gig workers in Venezuela to kind of label them, which was a little bit unsettling because most of the users didn't realize that it's somewhere hidden in the terms of service that the pictures would be used by people, and some pictures which were uploaded were like people sitting on the toilet, naked kids, whatever, you can be creative. I have here some examples from the MIT Tech Review article. I was helping the journalists like to figure out which device it is because I have like from all the devices to camera perspective, so I really quickly figured out that's iRobot. And it turned out to be actually iRobot. And the question is like, why do they need to know what kind of AC you have, what kind of switches you have, and everything else? So this is like basically the stuff which was labeled in Venezuela from the gig workers. As a small fun fact, as soon as the article came out, or as soon as the journalists actually started to send out like requests to all the vendors and asking about them, that things, many of the vendors panicked and started to change their firmwares, apps, and also privacy policies. So you see a lot of privacy policies being changed around November, December 2022, which is kind of interesting. The other thing, which is a motivation for me also, these kind of devices have more and more sensors. So, I mean, at some point we got cameras, which is kind of bad. But nowadays, some of the robots have even microphones. And one of the things which I want to mention here is like when we started 5 years ago, we were kind of joking, like, okay, we tried to find a way to use the ultrasonic sensor to basically listen to people, or maybe you can use like some other sensor to kind of spy on people. But nowadays, we don't need to do that. The robots come with microphones themselves. As a quick note, I know there's some papers out there which claim that you can use the LiDAR to snoop on people by flashing the firmware and stuff like that, but I can tell you today that it's not possible, that the paper is more or less not accurate. So I know it's out there, but the shocker in academia, people might be not super accurate what papers are. So you cannot use the LiDAR as a microphone, just as a hint. All right, so what are risks of devices with cameras? Well, some of the devices might store pictures indefinitely. Sad news is also a lot of them do, both in cloud and locally. There's some ways how I was able to figure that out. So far, I can't tell you exactly which companies they are, but there's some. Also, if you buy used devices from, for example, Amazon Marketplace, you need to be a little bit careful. You don't know what was installed previously on the device. So the previous user might have installed a rootkit. The new owner cannot verify the software, and as a result, you might have a malicious device in your network. So we are in a hacker conference, and I just want to say it's super illegal to do that, so don't do that. Don't buy devices on Amazon and, you know, root them, put some rootkit onto that, and send it back to Amazon. That's very rude and probably illegal, I assume. I hope so, at least. Okay, so rooting is more or less the only way how you know that the device is clean in a way. So one of the things which is kind of interesting, especially in Germany, from like some German press articles, some vendors got a little bit got a little bit creative in the sense of like users which are privacy aware, and they try to avoid the word camera as far as they can, and instead they try to use the optical, like the word optical sensor. And I have here an article from Golem. I don't want to shame Golem, but I mean, many do that, and they kind of asked the vendor, and the vendor said, like, oh yeah, optical sensor is accurate. So it's not a shaming thing, it's just like an info thing here. So what Roborock kind of said is like, oh, so we don't have cameras in there. For privacy reasons, we just put an optical sensor which detects lasers. So it's privacy, it's good for your privacy, so don't worry, everything will be fine. And I have an output of the optical sensor on the right. by the way, sorry, it says Hello DEF CON, but I was too lazy to create another picture for that. So yeah, so as you see, that's an output of an optical sensor, so no camera involved, nothing to see here. Right. Also, certifications are very important. Most of the devices which are have cameras have like some kind of certification, either by TÜV Rheinland or by TÜV Süd, so both of them are kind of testing all the devices, and you know, all these devices met the European cybersecurity standards. So I think we can end the talk here because all of them are secure, I assume, because, you know, they got tested. Yeah. Sadly, yeah, we can't end here. All right. So what happened so far? Let me give you a quick rundown here. Let's start with a general observation, like what we saw in the last 5 years. So every time we release a routing method, the vendors react in weird, sometimes different ways. So sometimes they even react in a way that they break things. And there was like some case where they pushed a very quick firmware update, which started to break hundreds of vacuum robots, like permanently, because they kind of started to panic and started to do weird things, which is kind of sad, which we want to avoid, obviously. The best case for us if we react is that our routing method just fails in a way that it says, like, hey, the file system is broken, we don't accept it, we don't boot it, so whatever. That's the best case. So sadly, some vendors started to do things which are a little bit more mean. The routing succeeds, everything is fine, but the device will break randomly. For example, while it cleans, at some point it will just crash, and you know, it's very hard to debug. In particular cases, it's also so if it detects manipulations or like rooted firmware, it will just destroy itself permanently. So it will just delete its keys, and you know, it will be kind of like a problem. So that's the reason why we need to buy the device in advance to kind of figure stuff like that out. So let's start with the first work in 2017. This was a work together with Dani Wegemer. And it was about the Xiaomi first generation, and the Roborock S5, which is also kind of like the first generation device back then. Some of the findings which we found were that the firmware images are unsigned and only encrypted with a very weak key. And I think the very weak key was like just Roborock as the name of the company. This by itself wouldn't be a big issue. The problem is that you could push custom firmware on the local network. And so basically you could just flash the device, you know, over network. This is not necessarily a problem for us of people who want to root the devices, but it's a bigger problem if you have like malicious people who want to do bad things. Now people might say like, okay, I don't have access, so typically attackers don't have access to your personal network. The problem is if your device is in unprovisioning provisioning mode, basically, so if it opens its own Wi-Fi access point and waits for like pushing it into your private Wi-Fi, then you can do the same pushing, like basically you can push the firmware onto that too. When I was living in Darmstadt, I saw some of my neighbors had like Xiaomi vacuum robots, which were paranoid, they didn't put them into their Wi-Fi, so they had open Wi-Fi access points on the robot. And I didn't do it, but technically I could have, you know, pushed like a malicious firmware onto that and just wait one day, they will probably put it in their Wi-Fi and then they would be screwed. Still, don't do that. If you see unprovisioned robots in your neighborhood, don't hack them. That's very mean and annoying. Anyway, so what's the result of these two facts? One of the things is we could root the devices without disassembly, and we could start the development of custom software and voice packages. A lot of people in Germany apparently are very, interested in voice packages. I mean, for me, English is fine, but a lot of people got very creative with like GLaDOS and some other things. This was published on the CCC Congress in 2017 and also DEF CON in 2018, so exactly 5 years ago. So as you see, I do that stuff for a very long time already. The reaction from that was Roborock, who developed both these devices, was not very happy about that. So what they started to do is like they started to block local firmware updates in the firmware, which is technically okay from a cybersecurity perspective, so I wasn't super mad about that. But also then what they started to introduce is they basically signed all the firmware and voice packages, so we couldn't necessarily create our own anymore. And each of the devices, each of the device models basically use different encryption keys. So we had to basically get every device individually, like every model, and extract the keys to kind of, look in the firmware. One of the things where we got a little bit annoyed about people buying cheap devices in China and using them in Europe was basically that they started to enforce region locks so that you couldn't import a device anymore and that you can't run them, in Germany because for whatever reason. I mean, we just want to avoid that. However, one of the interesting things is that the hardware mostly remains the same. So if you bought every 2 years a vacuum robot from Roborock and you take the PCBs out and compare them to each other, the layout is more or less the same. So they sell you more or less the same hardware configuration all over again every 2 years or every year even. So it's like that's their business model, I guess. They can't charge you for updates, but they can charge you for new hardware, just as a side note. Anyway, the problem which we had now is like we needed to disassemble the device, which was kind of like a problem. I have here an example. So basically, you need to completely unscrew the device. You need to solder maybe a few things. One of the good things here was this method. So we figured out a way to kind of bypass that, which required disassembly. And this worked for the Robot S6, S5 Max, S7, and also others. The initial idea which we had was that we accessed the U-boot shell via UART. Sadly, we figured that out at some point and fixed that. And the new approach was that we get the device into bootloader mode and just patch the file system over USB. And this turned out to be the more efficient way to do that. Again, the disadvantage is we need to disassemble the device, which kind of is annoying, but I mean, that's the price of doing business, I guess. One of the interesting facts is that this method still works until today for all the Allwinner R16-based devices. So for example, S7 Pro Ultra and Q7. When they saw that we have a new way to root the devices, they reacted again and were not necessarily happy. So as mentioned before, they locked the bootloader down, so we don't have a U-boot shell anymore. And then they basically got through the book of like all security methods and started to introduce things like Secure Boot, SE Linux, they introduced the Amverity, and even newer devices have encrypted encrypted file systems where the user data and application is encrypted, so we can't even figure out like, okay, what is the application actually doing? So we only see like portion of the system. And they started to use Trustzone, where they store the keys in OpT, basically, which has also the risk if you do any sketchy things where the keys just get wiped. So you need to be careful with that. One thing which we introduced at some point were custom ELF binary signatures, which I never saw before. So basically, we're signing all ELF binaries which exist in the system. And every time you try to execute like a unsigned binary, it just wouldn't execute. You would get a sec fault. So in 2021, we fight back. So this was a thing which I presented at Oh, this is actually not accurate. I think I presented at DEFCON 21, not here. And the method was basically to bypass the ELF binary verification and the security. So one of the ideas was to modify the configuration partition, but it required basically the desoldering of the eMMC flash chip, so which most of the people can't do or don't want to do because it will very likely brick your device, or you need some ISP access. So this was a very specific method for a very specifically specific people who are good with soldering, but it's not a broad thing. And that was the reason why we said, like, okay, we want to maybe take a look at different vendors for now and just wait until Roborock kind of cools down and kind of gets more relaxed and stops being mean. And one thing which we found where was a new vendor, which is Dreamy. And we were very similar devices to Roborock. Basically, we were powerful, we had cameras. They had an extremely easy routing method, basically, before disassembling. And we were able to basically flash them over USB. One of the problems with the flashing over USB part was that some devices got soft bricked, but I think that we solved that problem nowadays. So how did Roborock react onto our DEF CON talk back then? Well, I got a very nice email from the Roborock CEO one day after my talk. Oh, thank you for the talk. Our engineers watched the talk live and are fixing right now all the vulnerabilities. So that's the reason why I know that we are watching these talks. What we did now is like they encrypted all the partitions except the system partition, which they can't do for technical reasons. They started to obfuscate the ELF binary signature verification, so we cannot find it that easily and patch it. And we started to add custom code into random libraries to kind of detect if we try to bypass the traffic. So one of the ways how we kind of disconnect devices from the cloud is that we redirect the traffic via DNS to the robot itself, so that basically nothing goes to the cloud, everything stays on the robot. And they figured out, like, hey, do you still want to exfiltrate traffic from the robot? So how can we do that? We just have a detection which detects if you have if you want to upload something to your roborock.com domain. And if you do that, it has like some obfuscated way to kind of do DNS queries on itself in the libcurl library. So at some point, we noticed, like, wait, we have still traffic going to Roborock, even though that we have blocked all the domains. And so we figured out that we introduced like some sneaky way to still exfiltrate log files and some other stuff, even if the device is rooted. So we figured it out. We patch it nowadays. But this is like one of the things they try to find ways to bypass our routing methods. And nowadays, they love obfuscation. Like, they use XOR like everywhere they can use it. So it's kind of like gets a little bit annoying from time to time. So how does their stuff look like? So as mentioned, they nowadays check for ELF signatures in the kernel. So basically, they use the do mmmap function, which basically creates like a memory area, I think, for if you try to run a program. And if the file is not signed correctly, it will basically segfault. So every time you try to execute your own custom binary, it will just segfault, nothing happens. And they got really creative in naming that function. So I have an example on the right, which is basically the do nmmap function from the S8. And they started to use names like clock set rate DSP0. There's no DSP0, by the way, or clock set whatever thing. So these functions are actually just to verify the signature, but they named them in the super weird way so that we would think, like, oh, that's probably something important, so we don't touch it. But in reality, that's where obfuscated signature check. And they do some weird other stuff. So I think they use some code obfuscation tools to kind of basically try to get us off track. So at the same time, Dreamy started also to panic directly after the talk. So they did a lot of changes in their firmware. They removed the UART lock-in shell and the U-boot shell, so they just patched U-boot. And they pushed changes which started apparently to brick robots if their firmware version was too old. So it was kind of weird, so we got a lot of feedback back from people who didn't have rooted vacuum robots, but their device was bricked from like a firmware update. And especially this happened outside of the warranty, so they kind of para-brick devices. One of the fun facts is, because we compared firmware updates, we found a way simpler routing method which we weren't aware of. So they patched something where we didn't know that it was there, and it was very helpful, because one thing which we noticed that they removed this function. And what it does is, if you press the reset button for 1 second, it will pop a login shell. And we had no idea, because we thought, like, okay, we removed the login shell, so we need to do the USB and whatever. And then we noticed, like, wait, they removed that. And it took, like, many, many months until it got actually pushed into, like, all the devices which were newly produced. And we saw that, and we were like, oh, wait, there's a way safer method, because now you can connect over UART, press the reset button for 1 second, and just get a login shell, and you can log in with a particular password. So this was very helpful, so thanks for showing us this thing. This is not the only time that this happened, so we found a couple other things which were also kind of useful. Right, but we started to panic even more, and we introduced, like, secure boot, and have set the e-fuses, which was kind of being expected. We signed the system partition and are doing the verification over U-boot, which is the bootloader. And they started to pair the kernel with a particular version of the system partition. And this is kind of important for the thing which we did next. They basically introduced the judge countermeasures. So judge countermeasurements, what is that? This is one of the things which we introduced in 2020 in all new firmwares. So if you have a firmware which is newer than, or a device also which is newer than 2022, you have it. Rooted firmwares would start crash randomly. And it was super weird for us to debug that. And at the end of the day, we figured it out. But this was, like, super annoying, and it was super mean by them. And I think it was directly at us. This was not a thing against other vendors. It was directly at us. So what does it do? So they bake the expected SHA-256 hash of the root file system into the kernel. Then, as soon as you run the cleaning process, at some random time in that cleaning process, it will compute the hash of the actual system partition, compare it if it matches to the hash which the kernel expects. If the hash is not correct, they will just start spawning new threads and run malloc in a loop, which will basically cause that the whole memory, that you get a memory leak, basically, randomly. This can be after 5 minutes, this can be after 10 minutes, but the robot will at some point crash and just stop at some point. And this is extremely difficult to debug, because, I mean, the thing is, so there's no logs. You cannot run, like, trace the whole time, because it just happens randomly. So at some point we figured it out, but this was, like, extremely annoying and cost me, like, weeks of, like, reverse engineering and, like, figuring out what's going on and basically comparing firmwares. Why it doesn't crash with this firmware, why it crashed with this firmware, what changed, which is very sad. Anyway, so that was the past. We figured it out. So let's talk about the current state of robot security. I want to just use one device, which I think is, like, the one which has the most protections and is the most secure one, and that's the Roborock S8 Pro Ultra. That's the current flagship model by Roborock, so that's the newest kind of thing which we have. this device runs a Allwinner MR813, which is a quad-core SoC, and runs, like, a couple more MCUs. It has either 512 megabytes of RAM or 1 gigabyte of RAM. The reason why we have two different things is, I think, they started with 1 gigabyte and figured out they can get away with 512. So it's kind of like a cost-cutting measurement. And they have 4 gigabyte of flash. This device has two cameras, one LiDAR sensor and two line lasers. So it's kind of interesting from a platform. And security-wise, we checked everything in the book. Basically, secure boot, DM Verity Protect, rootfs, everything encrypted, SE Linux, and ELF signatures. All right. I want to give you a short rundown about the boot process of the S8 Ultra. It looks a little bit complicated, but it's important to kind of understand that for our attack. Let me just get a quick drink here. All right. So we start at the boot ROM, which is basically baked into the SoC. The boot ROM checks the baked-in hash, which is, like, in the e-fuses of the TOC0, which is, like, kind of like the first stage bootloader. This first stage bootloader initializes the RAM, so from there we can do other things. Then TOC0, or, like, first stage bootloader, checks the signature of TOC1, which is, like, a technical term here, which launches the Trustzone component, which is OpT, which then verifies and launches U-boot. U-boot gets its a boot configuration, then verifies and launches the actual Linux kernel. The Linux kernel has baked in the dmVerity key, which would basically verify and mount the root file system. And the Linux kernel has also the ELF binary signature thing, which will basically check all the init software, which will be launched up after that. The init software itself will talk again to Trustzone and will get the keys for the partitions and will start to decrypt the software partition and will decrypt the user data partition. So basically what this means is everything checked everything else, so which is kind of an issue. Well, or does it? So the question is, like, is everything actually checked by everything? Well, there's one thing which is a little bit questionable, and this is like the U-boot portion. So what is U-boot? It's the de facto default bootloader for embedded devices, so you find it in all the embedded devices models. It's very powerful software. It does some setup of hardware. It sets also the command line arguments for the kernel. It verifies the kernel and boots it. And the important thing here is it uses like an environment to configure itself. And why we need to use this environment is like if you do firmware updates, you don't want to do it on the operating system that you're running right now. You want to kind of do it on a copy and then just switch the copy. So you need to have like some mechanism to switch between both. So this is like the A-B booting. And it supports a very powerful command set. For example, it allows you to loading partitions into memory, which you need for the kernel load. It allows you to access memory and it allows you also to change memory. So access memory and changing memory. Can we do anything with that? Well, the question is, like, can we ask U-boot very nicely to just modify itself? And so the theory would be here, well, can we use the read and write commands to overwrite instructions in the sense of can we just patch the signature functions? And so what we need to do here is, like, we need to do a little bit of math. So we need to figure out where the signature function is actually in the memory. We need to figure out where U-boot is basically relocating itself, which is the kind of technical thing which U-boot is doing. And we need to calculate the exact place in memory. And then we can use this command, basically, which writes this E016 at this particular memory address. And this basically overrides all the instructions of the signature check function. Which means, also, what's the consequence of that? Well, if we supply U-boot with malicious config, what it will do is it will basically ask U-boot to patch itself very nicely, which will disable the verify function so we can start to modify the kernel. Because we have modified the kernel, we can basically disable the ELF signature verification and we can disable the root file system verification. And from there, we can just pull out the keys from OpT and, you know, we have everything compromised basically at this point. So we can run our own kernels, we can run our own file systems. So what we did achieve with that method generally? Well, we bypass the secure boot process. We can modify the kernel. We can remove all these checks which are in there. We can also disable Linux, which sometimes gets a little bit annoying, and we can modify the root file system. From there, we can start to install custom software and get SSH access. One quick comment here is it's not limited only on all-winner SoC, so this attack method surprisingly works for many, many other devices. So I tested it on other robots, I tested it on smart speakers, I tested it on media devices, so this works generally wherever you have U-boot. You can use the memory commands to just override and patch U-boot itself, basically, as long as you have access to somehow to the environment partition. Which brings us to the next problem. So how can we modify the environment partition? So the problem is, without root access, we cannot modify it, for obvious reasons. And we cannot also modify root file system if we don't have shell access to the device. And one thing which I can do, but probably most of the people in here can't do, is like to disorder the flash memory, which is kind of a little bit dangerous and will definitely void your warranty. So the good news is, I figured out a way to do that for each of the devices. So for the old P models, we have a new method, which is the USB stick method, which I will explain in a minute. For the newer devices, we use like FEL boot, so we get it into bootloader. And for all the Roborock devices, we have a thing which we call scary FEL boot, and I will explain why it's scary. So as a quick recap for people who saw the presentation 2 years ago, Dreamy is very, very nice and gave us lots of debug pins, which are accessible without completely disassembling the device. You just need to basically remove a cover and you have access there. And all the new devices have exactly the same pinout, so you can just, you know, if you have like a routing adapter, which you can get today for free here, if I have still some left, you can just connect to that and you get access to UART, USB, and some other things. So let's talk about the USB stick method. So Dreamy left a backdoor in all the P models for whatever reason. I think they just forgot about that. There's a script which gets executed as soon as you attach an empty USB stick. And this is how it looks like. So basically, if you attach an empty USB stick, there's a function which will try to check something. But as you see, this function is basically doing exactly the same thing. It will pop a login shell. So if you just attach an empty USB stick, they forgot to do the actual authentication. So you have a shell, and from there you can just do the old methods of rooting. Very, very easy. And so after login, you can just patch the environment, install custom software. It's super trivial. The sad news is, apparently for the new models, we didn't forget that. So I assume they have two branches which at some point separated. They did the implementation of the authentication in the new models, but they forgot to patch it back. So they have, I think, some weird issues with their code management. For the new Roborock models, we have this method FVL root. And basically what it does is we need to use some adapter, or we need to use a cable to just get it into bootloader mode. So we need to short the boot selection pin down to ground. And then we have a custom Phoenix Suite image, which will basically give us a fast boot interface to access the flash memory. So it's kind of, it's actually not really a firmware update. It's kind of like a weird, sketchy thing which got zombied together out of different parts, which barely works, but it works perfectly fine for whatever we try to do. So what it allows us to automatically patch the bootloader and the environment, and it allows us to send the root file system and the kernel onto the robot via USB. So, and it's very, very safe. So far we had zero bricked robots, and even if the robot is bricked, we can recover any robot by doing this method without erasing data which has existed before. There's a how-to on my website, which you can just look at. It's lots of pictures, so it should be very trivial. If you want to get adapters, there's some Gerber files online, but you also can get some from me. I have still some parts left, so in case you're interested, just hit me up. Let's talk about the scary FL route. So the problem which we have with Roborock, they're a little bit smarter. They don't give us any debug pins outside, except for USB. And so, you know, I got a little bit desperate. So the first approach, which I typically do, is I need to completely tear the device down. So I spend $1,000, get the device, assemble it, like remove the PCB. One thing which I typically do is I remove also the main processor, which is like 400 something pins, and start to map out where the tracks are going. I remove also the eMMC on the backside and do the same thing. So then the big question is like, okay, I take both pictures, put them above each other in my favorite hacking tool, MS Paint, and look at the data sheet and just map down, okay, where are the pins? So you see there, I started to kind of map down like, oh, okay, I have like RX, TX, FEL, I have like the data lines of the UART. And the same thing I do at the front. So basically I run all the things down and figure out where are the traces for what, so that I have some idea. And one of the things I noticed is actually, I can get access to all the MMC data lines and pins which I need to access eMMC memory from the holes of the buttons. So basically, I will just do a quick thing, even though I don't have that much time. Basically, if you disassemble the device, you just remove, without disassembling the device, you just remove the one cover, and you remove the rubber cover, and you can access everything from this hole without just touching any screws on the back. So you don't need to disassemble the device, you don't trash any warranty seals. You can access everything from the holes of the buttons. I think my presentation is gone. Is this my laptop? Okay. No, okay, let me, sorry about that. Okay. This is a faster way to do that, actually. All right, I promise I will be very quick for the last 5 minutes because I'm running a little bit off the time. Okay, so the good news was that I can access all the holes from all the pins from. I'm so sorry. I promise it worked better at DEF CON. Okay. Why is it scary? Basically, we can root the device now without teardown. We can access it from under the cover, and that applies both for S8 and S8 Pro Ultra. What we can do with that is if you short the data zero pin to ground at boot up, it can't load the file system, so, or even the bootloader, and will go into bootloader mode, which is kind of great for us, and then we can just flash it again over USB. So it's basically the same approach as for the L10 Ultra or all the ARM models, and there will be also how to do that very easily. The question is, why is it scary? And the scary part is you need to kind of basically find where the trace is, and I kind of marked it in this presentation, and you need to scratch off the solder mask and access the copper trace. I would give you a demonstration, but I think I'm running definitely out of time, so maybe hit me up later and I can just show you with a microscope how to do that. Don't do this method, by the way, if you feel uncomfortable. As an alternative, you can still tear it down, so before you break your device, it might be safer to disassemble it and just connect to the actual pin on the back of the mainboard. If unsure, please ask others. There's a Telegram group where a lot of people did already a lot of experiments with that and did it on their own, so they know how to do that. For the other robot models, a little more complicated, so sadly for most robots, the process is more or less the same, but we cannot access the flash or the bug pins from outside, so you need to disassemble them. Here, the alternative way to get into FAL mode is to basically connect over UART and press to, press the keyboard to while basically accessing it. You can check also my website robotinfo.dev for the pinouts, or again ask in the community. So for the last few slides, what can we do with root access? So what do we have now? So we have secure boot defeated. We can run custom software, but what kind of software can we run? And the question is, can we, build something of our own with as an operating system with SLAM, navigation, and AI models? Well, to do our own software is a little bit complicated. So our main idea is, can we just disconnect the device from the cloud and just keep all the vendor logic in place and just, run, with the original software? So one of the questions is what kind of different ways can we do that? Some people think we can just disconnect the cloud. This will make the robot work in most cases, if you press the buttons, but you will lose the features like live maps or advanced features in map editing. And why rooting the device if you just basically lose all this functionality? So instead, what we try to do is we try to redirect the cloud traffic to our own software. And for that, we need to extract some firmware secrets and to basically, point it to a fake cloud emulation. So let's talk quickly about replacing the cloud. The initial approach which we had was to redirect DNS traffic. And this was kind of easy. We were just changing the host files or use IP tables to reroute that. Sadly, Xiaomi, who runs the ecosystem, the backend, kind of figured that out. And so what we did is they started to introduce some counter measurements and they basically hard-coded IP addresses in the cloud binary, which was a little bit mean because that means that DNS redirection doesn't work anymore. Our counter measurement was basically countermeasured their stuff. We just replaced their hard-coded IP addresses with our hard-coded IP addresses, and it was just working fine. So this allowed us to run Valetudo, which is the custom software which is developed by Zuan, and it completely replaces the cloud and the vendor apps. It runs locally in the robot, so you have one package which has everything in it, on the robot itself. It features everything which the cloud offers you, full robot control, live maps, map editing, the robot configuration. It has a responsive web interface. And it works both in mobile and desktop. It gives you also REST API and MQTT functionality, which is important for people who run home automation software. The weird thing choice from Zuan was basically to use embedded JavaScript. There might be something more performant, but it works. These devices are powerful enough. Anyway, to give you some ideas how this looks like, it's a very nice interface, and it gives you all the functionality which you need. One thing, how do you get the custom software generated? There's a website called Dustbuilder, and one of the reasons why I created this website was basically that Mac users started to brick their devices because Macs are kind of behaving a little bit weird how they unpack file systems and repack them again. So I just want to avoid the support cases and just have a website which takes care of that. So basically with this website, you can build your own robot firmwares, and they most of the time reproducible builds. It's easy to use. It works for Dreamy, Roborock, and Biomi, and some others. If you don't trust it, the scripts are online on GitHub. You can just do it themselves. You just need the firmware file, which we can't provide you out of legal reasons. But if you're interested in that, you can go to this website. All right, there's a couple more interesting things, but I think I will get torn down from the Let me maybe quickly go through that.
Exactly. We have a proposal for you guys. As the time has elapsed already and due to technical issues, we already are 5 minutes over. We just want to give everybody the opportunity to go to the next talk, perhaps. However, as this stage will only continue at 12:30 with a movie night with War Games, which you could definitely have a watch, we want to also give you the opportunity to share and demonstrate, especially the robots you brought here, until 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I think it's
if that's fine for the crowd. Looks like it, so please continue.
All right. Yeah, sorry for the technical issues. I tested everything before, but you never know. Anyway, what kind of interesting things did we find? Well, we have some camera access. All the devices use the Video for Linux subsystem for their cameras. So if you have root access on the device, you can just talk to the cameras via the device nodes, like Video 0, Video 1. And some of the vendors were even so nice and left us debugging tools for the cameras, like Camera Demo, which is an opener tool where you can just pull pictures and configurations from the camera. So let me show you some examples from the optical sensors. This is like the Roborock G10S, which is mostly used in China and I think in Russia and some other Eastern European states because we can get it cheaper. On the left, you see the robot seeing itself in the mirror. So some philosophical picture, basically. And on the right is some example of the output. Dreamy is a little bit better, has a better, nicer cameras. So on the left, you see the Dreamy L10S Ultra, again, in the mirror. And on the right, you see one of the pictures which it does use for object detection. This is in our lab in Boston. So this is the kind of quality of pictures you get nowadays. This is one where this is from the S8. Basically, on the left, it's a little bit weird because I think I didn't have the exposure correctly. On the right, you see my blue elephant, which I left in the tent, I think. So it's not blue here because it has like an infrared camera, so it sees basically just in black and white. Right, let's talk about quick findings which we found at Dreamy. So last time, if people saw the last time presentation, you might seen some very sketchy things which were left in firmware. Good news this time, they didn't leave SSH credentials to the backend service in the firmware this time, so that was good for them, I assume. They made a lot of improvements in the software, so the software is more stable, it's more clean, which is also very good for us. One of the bad news is that they introduced a lot of like calling home functions and started to enforce geo-blocking by IP addresses. So they introduced a lot of functions where they would detect if you if you buy a cheap device in China and use it anywhere else, and I think vice versa. So there's kind of some weird stuff going on. Also, one quick thing is many robots will detect where we are. Roborock does it, Dreamy does it, and a couple other companies do that too. If you're, for example, in America, they will disable some functions in the software, basically. So you don't have edge cleaning anymore if you are in the US, or if it detects that it's in the US. And part of the reason is apparently that iRobot has patents on that, which expire, I think, next year. So I would expect that this function gets enabled magically next year. Also, some devices have a dust sensor to test how dusty the air is, but it's not enabled in software because iRobot has, again, a patent on that, which expires next year. So I think it's kind of weird patent stuff. So in case of you wondering why they're so livid about geo-blocking, it's one of these legal reasons also. So the other thing is Dreamy robots and also other robots support camera monitoring, so you can watch your pets remotely. And for legal reasons, most of the time, if you're for actually all the devices, if you enable the remote camera feature, it will warn you via voice prompt and say like, oh, camera monitoring is enabled, and it will repeat that every 3 minutes or so. This is, I think, a legal requirement in many, many countries. And one of the things is that these voice prompts need obviously to be localized. So, for example, you don't want to hear like a English voice prompt if you're in Germany and some other things. So, these audio files are part of an externally downloaded audio pack. The problem with this audio pack is they are not signed or encrypted. So, basically, you can just override the audio prompt, like this warning audio prompt, with an empty file and basically push it onto the device and just disable this prompt, and you can spy on people, which is probably, I think, a little bit illegal, so don't do that again. That's probably very illegal in Germany, I think. The important aspect here is it works on all devices, not only rooted devices, so be a little bit careful if you get device from somewhere else. one of the biggest fails I saw so far for a very long time was how they signed their signatures. So I think this is part of a panic process which we had last year or 2 years ago. So new robots of Dreamy encrypt and sign the firmware, but in a very weird way. So the firmware payload looks like this. So you have an outside zip archive, which is encrypted with a static password, which is different for each of the models. Then they have a random file, which is signed with a private key by Dreamy, which you don't have. And then you have a zip archive in inside, which is encrypted with the random file as the password. Well, what's the problem here? Well, the actual firmware is not signed, only the password is. So basically, they signed the password, but they didn't sign the actual firmware. So you can basically create your fake firmware update by just reusing the password which we used before. As an analogy, what I would say is, imagine you could prove that the phone is yours if the PIN on the phone is the same as yours. So it's kind of like if I have a phone which has the password 1234, well, actually, now that I think about it, the analogy is kind of weird. But okay, it's a huge problem. So that's a very, very huge fail. So basically, you can create your own firmware updates, which are correctly signed in a way without the private key of Dreamy, because we just signed the password and not the actual firmware. All right, as a summary, finally. So we have routing methods for most of the current released Dreamy and Roborock models. So we can bypass secure boot, we can bypass any other security mechanism. We have persistence, we can run our own custom software. Now we can validate and verify vendor claims, which is a very good thing. This is probably what the TÜV should have done some time ago. And the bootloader attack is also pliable to many, many other devices. So if you have smart speakers and they run U-boot, then just take a quick look into that if you can, you know, manipulate that. And this this whole routing method basically allows us also to do further research into IoT and AI. As some final notes, please don't use your knowledge for bad things. If you do routing, please help others if they need help with routing. Not many people are kind of feeling comfortable with doing that. Especially if you have routing PCBs, feel free to share them in your hackerspace. The tools are mostly published already, but there's still some work to do because I was a little bit busy over the next couple of days, over the last couple of days. So if there's something not published yet, please be patient. This will be published very soon. If you're interested in more vacuum robot hacking or flash forensics, you can join me at the Hardware I/O in the Netherlands, which is in the beginning of November. There might or might not be a talk, maybe about vacuum robots again. This time not about Roborock or Dreamy. So. We will see. So, some acknowledgements. I want to thank Daniel Wegemar, Gevano Bier, Sören Bayer, and Michael Kolkin, and obviously also all the testers in the community. And yeah, that's my presentation. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me via Telegram, Twitter, or email. And thank you very much. I can also do a quick demonstration of the microscope if you're interested. Are you interested? All right, okay. Let me just change to the camera. By the way, the camp is very dusty, as you can see. These robots are not meant for being on a camp. So, as mentioned before, for the Roborock, it's a little bit sketchy or a little bit scary because you have to basically remove the cover, which is very easy. You can just remove it, and you have here the plastic part, the rubber part. And then you need to find the trays. Oh, oops. As you see, CS people are always tricky. All right. Now, let me just change it real quick. So this is the left button, basically. And as you can see in a second, we have there a trace. Which is basically, here comes the via out and then goes through here and goes there. So one thing which you can do to basically route it, you take like something pointy. You don't want to cut it, you just want to scrape off the trace a little bit. So you take it and you find like any way here and you just start to scratch. And at some point, if you use a knife, just scratch it, don't cut it, please. And at some point you will see the copper, and that should be more or less enough to kind of hold it down for like in the moment when you power the device on, and it will go into bootloader mode. Just scratch a little bit. I know it looks scary, and you need to have some very good eyes. If you have a microscope, that's bonus points, but you might use also a phone. And as you can see a little bit, you see like already now the copper, and that's enough. You just need to have like a very short contact. It's not mission critical, basically, to, you know, keep it in place. Actually, do I see the copper? Let me, yeah. I can scratch even a little bit more. It's a little bit tricky to do it on camera. The more effort you put into that, the less it's visible. All right, I think it should be. Okay, just imagine that you see the copper there. You should see at some point the copper. Again, don't catch a trace, but you can scratch it off anywhere you want. For the other devices, it's a little bit easier. The scary aspect of like rooting the Dreamy devices is to remove the cover, and it will feel wrong because you need to use a lot of force. And because I did that already probably 50 times for these ones, this is easier, but at some point it just comes off and you have the bug pins very, very nicely here. So from a rooting perspective, Dreamy is great, but nowadays we can also root Roborock. So it's kind of like, I mean, you're not limited to one company or the other. You can just decide freely. All right, if you have any questions, feel free to ask them probably after this thing outside. Have a bag of couple routing adapters left. Sorry for the technical issues. It worked for me before, but I mean, you never know. It's computer stuff. All right, thank you very much for being here, and thank you very much for your patience.